Alan Watt, and this is Carrying Through the Matrix on the 1st of November 2020. They say time flies, eh? But I mean, you start to wonder if you're in some kind of time machine and it's going fast forward, because for me, it's like living through many talks I've given over the years in the past, where from their sources, they gave you lots of clues where they were heading with the future, and it's here, the future is here, right? So we're going through amazing times as they fulfill big agendas that seemed just too far-fetched for most general public. Most of the public, it's sad to say, it is sad to say that the indoctrination has been perfect with them. But this is a natural thing. We're so well studied that we're predictable. And if you know the formulas to introduce certain hypes and fears and terror, the public will always behave in the same way. And Plato said that. So it's been done for an awful long time, eh? It's been used over and over. But we really are in it today, aren't we? And I mean in it, indeed, because of the massive changes that are planned and then implemented. And we'll go down in history just the same way as 9/11. I'm sure 9/11, apart from the fact they pretty well told you what they wanted to do with the wars that would happen if they could get a Pearl Harbor event from the PNAC group, the Project for New American Century group, the neocons as they call them. And they published them a couple of times in the 90s, and then 9/11 came along, and they got a Pearl Harbor event, and bingo, all these massive totalitarian measures were rammed out on the American people, but not just American, across the world at the same time. Again, see, that gives you a clue as well. Why would the whole world go into this anti-terrorism war, which is really a war upon the public, with massive surveillance on everybody and the loss of rights and freedoms and the loss of right even to walk into an airport with them being frisked, groped and all the rest of it, x-rayed, etc. We had all these rights before that you took for granted. We always take our rights for granted. And that's maybe the key to everything today, because you don't realize how you adapt into new normals, and they give you new normals. I gave talks on new normals back in the 90s. That's what I called it, a new normal. And I explained what it meant and how it was introduced. And here you are, the new normals are all here. And folk really think that especially the young folk, naturally, it's all they know. It's so odd talking about 9/11 again, because I remember saying the week that it happened, it might even be the night, and I said, a generation will grow up and 20 years down the road, they don't know any other way of living except massive surveillance as being normal, a digital kind of system that would come in, because they talked back then of bringing a digital currency because terrorists might use all the cash and stuff. All the bad guys use cash. And they just unfolded the agenda way back then. But now you have them. There's a lot of young folk who naturally, that's all they know, think it's all quite normal. And they question nothing. And why should they question anything? They can't believe that the parents allowed, if it's all true that it's mayhem and conspiracy, why would their parents allow it? Well, the parents were as dumb as they are, because we're always kept dumb. In fact, you're born with a pretty intact mind, but they go to work very quickly to destroy it. And that's the system in which you live. Never mind, there's countless articles and studies done, professional studies done, legitimate studies about the fluoride in the drinking water, for goodness sake, and the history of it being used in other countries that were totalitarian beforehand, and they noted the fact that it did drop a few IQ points off the public. So it's good for, that's a good reason to use it on the public if you want to have less fuss from them. But we do know that the United Nations, the World Health Organization, that you can't believe the World Health Organization, Doctor Who, for goodness sake, eh? Doctor Who, indeed. But they do a survey every year, and at least they publish the IQ, or they used to up until maybe 2 or 3 years ago, of different countries across the world. The same tests supposedly apply to the same age groups up and coming. Every year or so, and they said that the IQ was dropping pretty drastically, not just by percentages of 1 point, but by quite a few points. And of course, there's never a reason for it happening and never go. You understand, if you're truly looked after by the farmers and you're the cattle, you're owned. You are where they get all their cash from and their higher living standard. You build everything for them if you're working. You create the cash flow, and that's what they use to plunder you, to take it all from you in one way or another. And they make you dependent on their systems because they own all the corporations and factories in other countries. They never enter into the fact, they just own them all, big holding companies. But they make sure that you must use their products, including their health services, by the way, and their medications and vaccines and everything else, don't they? That's called fascism, for those who really don't know what it means. When the corporations collude with governments to control and manage and pretty well own the public, it's all been done. And of course, the little communists at the bottom never figure that. The ones who follow, I should say, never figure that out. But they're all useful idiots, according to the ones who own them and use them. Even Bertrand Russell said that too, and he was all for using them. To bring in the beautiful order on behalf of the intelligentsia, the people who should own all, you see, and know how you should be living. But again, if you're brought up to be naive, which everybody is, you're trained, and every country does the same techniques to make you believe the country's all genuine. You just stumble down through history, and they get occasionally give you a king or a queen that was half decent, and Germany had some, even had hobbies like, you know, repairing clocks and things. It's even a nice idea for a guy who just liked to build castles and fairy tale castles and work on clocks, you know, the old fashioned, beautiful clocks actually. So it must be a nice guy compared to some of them, and this is what you get. And it's true enough with the hit and miss idea. If you truly had just kings and queens running the countries, You would think occasionally you'd get one or two that's half decent, but in reality, kings and queens are the fronts, because the ones behind them, the advisors, the ones who do the work, the machinery of governance, they're the ones who have the power, especially the ones who run the money, obviously, to the system. That's what Rothschild is saying. He said, give me the control over the money of a nation, and I care not who makes the laws, because he makes the laws with every loan. Same with the United Nations. I've gone through some of them before, quite a few of them, and especially today with the World Bank and all that, and the money they dish out across the world, come with all these conditions of how you must adapt to the new cultures, and all the things that you thought abhorrent are now you better do, or you get no loans. And that's how it's always been. Money comes attached to conditions, not just financial conditions, but with running and changing and altering your culture, you see, which weakens you. That's the whole point of it. You can't be conquered as a culture unless you're allowed to be weakened. And you don't realize that it's like the Parthenon in Greece. You have a huge roof there in the temple with all these pillars. That's a lot of weight distributed amongst all those pillars, and architects know how to distribute exactly how much weight to each pillar so it's nice and strong. But you knock one down, you see it, that's a tenet of your culture, your system, you might say. It's an analogy. You knock one down, and now the rest of them have a little bit added extra weight to them to share amongst them. Then you knock another one down, no more, there's more resting on fewer and fewer pillars, and you keep knocking them down until you collapse. And that's how it's done. It's very Fabian in a sense, but that's how it's done. It takes a while to get it accomplished, but you're guaranteed for it to happen. It must eventually fall if you keep chipping away. And people never realize that if you even took each pillar as an example of being 50 years, you could go longer, actually 100, but say 50 years, and say one pillar goes missing. Well, in that 50 years, and there's a generation born and they're up to the age of 50 when the next pillar goes down, you see. And so you don't see it so much. You think it's just happening by itself. If it all happened within about a year or two, you'd all get wise and dumb. See, something else is going on here. So if you want to really take down a nation, well, you do the Gramsci type of takedown. You take over the culture until you run the culture. You are the culture, in fact. And that's how you take it down. Besmanov put it across pretty well too. Yuri Bezmenov, talks about the war on the Soviet system against the West was a cultural war, really. Because you destroy the culture, everything else falls apart. Anyway, folk won't go off and fight for wars and stuff if you destroy the culture. You can't get them unified behind any party in politics. You also make sure, see, even the ones who go into politics that are traditionally psychopathic become worse themselves until they're anything but role models to follow. So no one does follow them. Because they become corrupted even more so than they are by nature. But then when you get the public following the same corruption, mainly through entertainment and through the wars on the culture and adapting into the new systems of sexual revolutions that came with all the fallout of the sexual revolution, then step by step you become degraded and you collapse. You can't stand strong. And so you had the sexual revolution promoted through the movies. It really became a bit more explicit in the 1960s in Britain, that is. They tried it all from the beginning in Hollywood, really pushing it until they were hauled back a bit by different censoring committees. And then they came back out again in the 60s and really pushed it once again. So it's all cultural war. It isn't just what sells. I mean, that's definitely part of it too. Sex does sell. It's in all the ads and so on. And it's a primitive need, in a sense, you see. To nature doesn't care about if you can support children or not, or support yourself, as long as you have sex to make sure the species goes on. That's how you're made, you see. So you can always exploit something. It's the same as food. Food you need, you see, or you die. Which I think we'll come to again with the COVID stuff, is it create massive famines, which is part of the intention, to bring you into austerity. But that's a different story again. It's a different type of the war, of course. It's still terror. It's a war of terror upon the public, the whole COVID idea, and the lockdowns and so on, and destruction of your economy. One fell swoop, awfully good for the World Economic Forum and the Club of Rome, I must admit. Well planned, took years to plan it. But getting back to just the culture itself, you see, if you're a strong culture, you wouldn't accept any of that either. You really wouldn't. You have more common sense. And you'd have this idea, a strange idea that used to be pretty ingrained in people, because we fought for centuries to get it. One was privacy, and it also was lumped into your rights. You had individual rights, you see. And people have given it all away since 9/11 pretty well, under the guise of a war on terror, which is a war of terror on the public, which stripped you of all your rights and privacy and all the rest of it. And the second part now is a COVID, you see, so out the unroll, which was sitting on the same dusty shelves covered in dust, and they blow the dust off it and bring in the 5G Internet of Things and implement it all. And there's all this money, apparently. It's just fictitious anyway. But it's all this money to implement all these projects. And you can't fix roads and so on because it's not intended. It's not intended to fix roads. Infrastructures to be fall apart, at least outside the cities. They'll do some work eventually once you're all crammed into the sustainable cities and smart cities, as they want to call them. And they'll fill in a few potholes, but the rest of the country roads, they're going to just fill up and close off. I watched this happening for years, actually, the build-up to it, with where I used to do the talks on the United Nations, biospheres and so on. And they had these different areas marked off for human habitats and maps that they churned out. You mean, amazing for an organization that you pay billions to, but you don't get any right to vote for anything. In fact, you don't even get into talking about it, you know, with them. It's a closed shop, non-democratic. So this non-democratic system, which you support and finance, dictates all the policies for the future, because they in turn are owned as well, you know, by the same guys who own all your money systems and again guys at WEF, for instance. So they'll bring in their animal corridors and their human habitats corridors, and the human habitat corridors follow these big long highways that we're putting up through the 90s onwards to the present time. And that's where you have to live within a certain radius or outside of around those particular routes, you see. And if you're in the long lines outside of them, it's pretty precise. But if you live on the side roads that go off for miles and left and right, you know, east and west, you say, these roads go north to south, then you have to get closer and closer into the corridors because you won't even get Wi-Fi there. It's quite amazing. Because I know people who, like myself, for instance, I lived outside the corridor. And I can't get the Wi-Fi. If I was in a mile further in, I could probably get a signal, but I'm not. So this is got all these little encouragements for you to move. That's how it was done, you see. Most folk don't realize you're prompted to make decisions they want you to make without realizing you've been given no choice. Since I've planned a Wi-Fi future, right? And that's how they do it. And, the smart cities. I've been on the go for quite a few years now. I did lots of talks years ago about it, and organizations again involved. And in the cities with the councillors, they have councillors like in Toronto, for instance, city councillors. They're supposedly elected, I think. And that's a joke too with who they are, but I'm sure they're all on the payroll. They get kickbacks. We're in an amazing system of more open corruption. You see, I think it's always been here, but it's more open today because most of the folk, the public, don't seem to care so much when it's found out. But who decided to just make these smart cities? And we know who they were, the different companies and Google and all the rest of them that planned all this kind of thing with Silicon Valley, yada yada, massive projects worldwide. And the smart city projects of the Department of Defense, for instance, how the future would be these massive cities and eventually city-states. You see, that's what they'd planned for the future, right down to even having occasional wars between the new city-states, just like the old ones, the old wall cities. They'd have these wars, and mainly to do with finances, and this would be financial-type warfare and sabotage of each other's economies by the new system that would evolve, which would be, again, way post-democratic. They might even fade out the whole idea of politicians, which I wouldn't care about because they're all on the take anyway. We wouldn't be in the mess we're in if you had real people, real politicians, and real councillors even, who really cared about you and did what the laws say that they're there to do. None of them do, eh? None of them do. And you take this basic government. Doesn't matter if it's republic or so-called the farce of democracy. But you get a vote and that's it. Neither of them. That's it. A vote to get somebody in, that's it. But you forget what's even supposed to be. It's supposed to be that you send somebody off to government, either local, like a province or a state in the States, you know. But in Canada, it's a province. You send one off there, or one off, and maybe one off to the federal government, you see. But it's supposed to be one of you. It's not supposed to be a full-time profession. It's one of you who's elected to represent you, your area, your state, you see. Not a party, and not corporations or anything. I mean, all they do is sit there with their hands out for the lobbyists, these characters. That's what they do. Why do we go along there? It's because everything's changed gradually, like the pillars getting taken, until you adapt and think it's not quite normal. It's not normal at all. It's not normal when all the lobbyists can line up and these politicians have goodness knows how many secretaries to make all the appointments to see different lobbyists, but the general population that they're supposed to represent can't get in to see them. You can't even get a reply from them, or some rubber stamped, generic copy of something that's been used before. You feel your pain, signed so-and-so, you know, photocopied. And that's about all you get. And that's just, we live in a joke, don't we? And we pretend that we're somehow free, even though your grandparents and great-grandparents would be in shock to see what you've given up. Not even knowing you've given it all up, and you're still giving it up. To save your skins, you're giving up all your freedoms to fight this bug out there. This bug, this invention out of a horror movie, after giving you stacks of these movies in the past, getting you ready for it, because you're always trained through fiction, you see. Total lockdowns and plague and pandemic and virus and... And here's what you say you must behave, and here's what the authorities do. Really? Is that what they're doing? Huh? You're all trained in the fiction before they supposedly release something, if they did or whatever. And you jump in, and again, they're not taking your rights and freedoms away any more or less than they were doing it during after 9/11. They're keeping you safe. You know, the tyrants called down through it. We're keeping you safe. So you have no rights. In fact, if you demand rights, you're putting everybody else at risk. We are living in amazing times. It truly is amazing to watch it all come out. I like some of the old sci-fi movies. I mean old ones. Because it's like old stage plays. Maybe still some today, in fact. Amateur into the professional stage plays, where the actors have to really make you believe that it's real, whatever they're portraying to you, and their characters are real, you see. And Britain was a good country for giving you, and so was the States for years ago, for giving you good character actors, you see. They could play the role, very believable role, very adaptable, not just stereotyped in the same role over and over and over, like some are. But good character actors make it believable. And no matter how ridiculous, if it's a sci-fi, for instance, how ridiculous and how cheap the sets were, he enjoyed it because they got into it. They put a realistic enthusiasm in their part. And it's quite good with little cardboard boxes and things like that. And things that a lot of folk, youngsters today, would just laugh at because it's just too cheap. They're usually special effects and big money in special effects. And years ago, you didn't need that. You had good acting. And you had the human element. More of the human elements, different characters were evolved and portrayed. So it was really good. I liked that. But here's the difference. That still was fiction. And you always knew it was fiction. But again, here's an analogy. You take what they do, which is try and convince you that what they're trying to entertain you with is real. Regardless of the set, regardless of the settings around them on the stage or whatever it happened to be, or in the movie. And it almost was Shakespearean in a sense, if it's a play, because Shakespeare's stage used to come down into the audience. Like a kind of runway, and the audience could see the actors. But the idea was to make you, the audience, participate to an extent in the play. That was really important, and that stayed for hundreds of years, maybe even still today, trying to bring the audience into the stage play, the participation. And that's the difference between good entertainment, you see. But by the same token, you always knew that it was entertainment. But yet you transfer it all, because for the last maybe 30 years now, increasingly so, and actually even before that, to do with the sexual revolution, into the plays and movies that they put on television, it was all to change sexual culture, which is to change and actually destroy the marriage culture and the family unit, as it used to be known. I even joke today, because he talked about the nuclear family, and... But really, to my mind today, the nuclear, because everything's got double entendres and so on, the nuclear family today is transparent. You know, there's nothing I don't know about any of you. You're the nuclear family with the data, whereas the old one, of course, was the nuclear age and all the rest of it. But now you're clear. They can see right through you, and they know all about you. But they know more about you than you do, and everybody in your family. In fact, they even know what your family's up to when you don't. So that's a little play on the nuclear family. But you take the settings too of these old sci-fis, the cheapo sci-fis, and you would see the characters really get into the describing something horrible and alien and using cheap sets and so on and keep a straight face. Now, but that's a skill. Keeping a straight face with expression of consternation and worry or things, or even fear, you know, by these actors. But you put all it into the COVID thing, and look at Fauci, and he's giving me a laugh. I mean, you do. They keep straight faces, even though you see the giveaways in their faces, like Fauci, and definitely Bill Gates. I mean, he would flop as an actor any time, because there's something else in that character that there's nothing you could trust in the man. It really shines from his face. The most insincere eyes you've ever seen as he's prattling on and waving his hands around. But they're telling you to give up all your rights and freedoms and obey them and have demolish the economy, because this is the Great Reset, remember. This is the whole Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century, the whole thing, not just 2030 and different parts along the way, for the whole thing, right? Not just 15 years apart, the different implementation dates and so on, but the whole thing for the whole is getting rammed down now, you see. Sustainability, Agenda 21, and the Green New Deal, all these things, blah, 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 population reduction, austere living, meaning poverty. You know, I've said it before, you see, in Britain, that's what they used to call serfs. A serf wasn't a slave, because you're British, for goodness sake. You got this more modern idea of freedoms, new-led democracy, you know. So you could never have had slaves. You call them serfs, but that's what you were. You were bought and sold with land. You're a slave. In fact, if you ran away from the area you were born in, your lord could have the S branded in your forehead, for those who don't know that. And they did that. And could kill you too. But that's the way it was. That was the land of freedom, you know. Land of the free and home of the brave and all that. So that's how they whitewash history, to make the next generation go off to wars and fight for a British Empire, of course, which they wouldn't own any of it, the general population. They just pay for the upkeep of all and for the militarization of it and so on. Why should businesses pay for their enterprises, for goodness sake, when you get these massive populations that do it for you? You just make sure there's unemployment at a certain level every so often, and young guys will go off and fight. They do, you know, it's quite a natural thing for them to do, actually, in any country, if they can't get work. So you just make sure you always keep enough unemployed to go off, and then you tell them they'll be somebody, because if you're an unemployed young guy, you're a nobody, you see. But you go off and kill folk for your country, or your businesses, and you're a somebody. And they make you proud of it, and they do, and young guys will get me proud of it. You know, they feel no shame in what they did, because they're given basic, simple propaganda to believe in. Very simple. Brzezinski said it himself, and so did Kissinger. You must always give them simple propaganda, not elaborate, complex propaganda, because then you can pick holes in it. Make it simple, keep it simple. And that never changed that. But as I say, we live with so many fallacies of the past. You know? People look at these old, awful BBC dramas. I always say that when a country's in decline, you see a nation's in decline, when they always use your tax money to make stuff like the BBC does, movies for TV or whatever, plays on maybe the 17th century or something like that. And they show you these cottages and with the thatched roof, some of them, you know, for the peasantry, and the better ones for the lords of the manor. And they're always decent folk, these lords of the manor, you know, and we get their family problems and the dramas and fictions that they give you. And we should all be concerned about the elite's family problems, not the peasants who are living on straw on the floor of their homes. And how they can really drastically change society and their impression of what society was and what it is today. And yet there was a culture, it doesn't matter about how poor folk were, there was a definite culture, absolutely, a very strong and rich culture. You find it in most countries, in fact. Underneath it all, there's still that decency and a real strong culture, you know. They might have been wearing silks and so on, but they still had a strong heritage. Of course you did. And even that now is getting eradicated because it's their destiny to, it's been planned for them, predestined for them to be wiped out pretty well, or bred out of extinction. And that's the truth of it, folks. It's not my opinion about stacks of information and info from sources who actually work towards it. But that's how it is. But you do get false histories. So yeah, we've never seen so many poor actors compared to the old sci-fi. We've got poor actors now coming out to terrify you. And then you've all these admissions, lots of admissions from the companies like Sage involved in Britain, and the ones for the States. I've got the ones for the States and Canada too, eh? Never mind all the other ones, the battalions of cyber warfares, the operatives, they call them, thousands of them, working for the Brigade 77 and so on like that. But and many other organizations like that, doing unconventional warfare. So it's all lumped in with unconventional warfare, which is a strategy well-funded indeed with special operations. Pure cyber warfare, and they do. If you're a nuisance, and if you open up chat rooms and so on, or you even put down comments on anything you put out there on social media, and comment section, you'll be infiltrated right away. If you're a problem, if you're a nuisance, and you have people who will give you fake names and all the rest of it, they'll try to befriend you. And because they've already found you. Don't forget, when you've got access through Silicon Valley and the NSA to your entire personality and the profiling they've done on you, they can see any weak spots that you've had. They've got your histories too, you know. And they'll know how to open that little chink, that whatever weakness is, and then they'll try and blow your mind by turning on you after they befriend you, things like that. These are from their operations manbooks, that manuals, by the way. They actually have operational manuals on this man. Your taxpayer funds this. These anonymous pieces of you-know-what that are funded by your tax money, they try and wreck folks' lives. This is your government. This is the folk that you vote for, these governments, that employ this filth by the thousands, to quench any other opinion on any particular topic that the government wants to be have eliminated. And you still think you're a free and democratic society. What a joke, eh? What a joke. And yeah, I could go on and on and on about the COVID, but I won't right now. Maybe later I'll give a few articles out. But the thing is, I mean, I don't even argue the debate that they want you into with the facts versus what they tell you, you know. Even from though it comes from the same sources, which they'll then counter again and deny. You've got it all. This is all deliberate psychological warfare. It's a technique that they use. They used it in 9/11 as well. And even before 9/11, they've used the same techniques, where they put out the initial propaganda, and then they say, well, this is how it happened. Because you had thousands of folk that saw the same footage and say, well, wait a minute here, this looks like controlled demolition. And so you immediately put out one or two contrary opinions to it, or you'll see what's been chatted, especially today with social media. In real time, they can get folks' opinions on the, you know, guided to them, and they know what's being said. And before you know it, they've got a whole bunch of other theories thrown out there with very professionally sounding professors and so coming out with these ideas. What else could you have done this, you see? Because beforehand, the one thing everybody was united on, wait a minute, we've seen this before with controlled demolitions. So that was a unified front. The word is unified. Everybody saw that. That's the conclusion they came to. How do you destroy an opposite? You must divide and conquer. And so before you know, and they know how to do it. And they'll even target their news to certain people, knowing that they'll fall for this line of it and they'll fall for that line. Until you have them all arguing with each other. And then the general population and folk who come along a year later and look into it, or 2 years later, get totally confused and give up and just deny it all. It's conspiracy. That's how you do it. They've all been neutralized. Rather than stick to the initial premise. We all saw them falling in like controlled demolitions into their own footprint. They all dropped, poof, pop, 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 floor by floor. And that was destroyed effectively by, well, it could have been amazing radiation techniques and super this. But who cares? The fact is, you all saw it. If you're unified, then you'd be together. A much bigger opposition. It's harder to ignore a bigger opposition. And the same thing comes along with COVID, as you know. And initially, they've changed the name three times, I think, isn't it? Three times The SARS had SARS-CoV-2, remember? So it was a SARS-type virus. They didn't say, well, why didn't we all die with SARS-CoV-1? Huh? Why didn't we? I mean, we didn't give vaccinations all put out the community for that, did we? And I guess it's all forgotten because folk build up herd immunity to viruses. That's what you do anyway, is by nature, you see? But what they don't tell you as well, if you take the PCR test, the swab test they're using, which is not meant for diagnosing, it's pathetic. The inventor said that. The facts don't matter, you know. Because they're guaranteed to get results. Well, they always pick up fragments of viruses, and they literally amplify them. They multiply them through different techniques in the laboratory to try to see if there could be a lot. Could it possibly indicate somewhere down the line a live virus? And every country's got different levels of measuring these fragments, you see. So they can get different results. It's useless for testing for that. Apart from the fact you're always breathing in viruses. It's like with COVID, folk didn't die until you heard the COVID. Suddenly death is happening. But they don't tell you that the same numbers, or maybe even more at times, have died every winter from the flu and the cold. And it's the elderly that are more vulnerable always too, or folk who are compromised with lung diseases and so on. That's just the way it is. It's always been that way. And there are there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of viruses out there all the time. Their body fights off, and you don't always have the antibodies to them, because after a while, certain T cells actually have memories. It's almost like a blueprint. They know how to remanufacture the particular antibody if that thing came back. That's how it works, you see. Otherwise, with so many viruses out there, you know, and like lots of coronavirus types, including the common cold as well. With all them out there, your body you'd be dead again with cytokine storms all the time. And in fact, there'd be more antibodies to everything that you've had in your lifetime and didn't know you had. Never gave you problems. You fought it off without even knowing your body has a good immune system. But your there'd be more antibodies than you'd have red blood cells. As simple as that. So your body's a great machine. They can actually stop overproducing them when it's not sensing in your environment the same stimulus from a particular virus. So it'll switch it off for a while. But it's still got the blueprint how to manufacture it, if should it come along. That's normal. So you read bits and pieces of these things coming out of the different medical journals, and it's printed in the papers. They're very selective not to tell you that your body, they'll say, oh, you know, and it's interesting, even Fauci said that, there's no guarantee that your own immune system is going to create antibodies that will last very long. Well, not same with the vaccinations. Why don't you give the flu shots every year? So this is the jokes with all these things. But they know darn well that you understand. Think back to this, what they call the Spanish flu. Think back to the articles you've read about it, at least, and there's lots of documentaries about it. And never mind the living conditions about it. Never mind the fact that lots of them were in the army at the time during a World War I, which was a horrible system. And More folk died in World War One of disease, probably, than anything else in the trenches for years, for goodness sake. A lot of them didn't get home even for a leave in 4 years in Britain. And terrible climate as well, and terrible winters, and mud and all. Ugh. Malnutrition, yeah, yeah. But yeah, how come the whole planet didn't die off of the Spanish flu without a vaccination? Huh? Well, naturally, you developed antibodies, and the folk who produced antibodies threw it off. A lot of folk, again, didn't show symptoms of it. That's standard stuff. Certain folk might be more prone. They could either hit you at the R or the older. This is how viruses work. But it also depends on times and conditions. Yeah? And when you have malnutrition in societies like you still had in World War One, you had rationing going on in European countries. And then you hit with some, and that included coal shortages. A lot of coal was going off to the war effort for factories, for munitions, and for heating, you know, and powering the machinery, steam. And also for the navies, massive navies. Yeah. So there was less and less of coal, right? So coal was rationed for domestic use. So you put these things together and you get a lot of other problems, eh? Including, don't forget too, a lot of folk were dying of flus and things, other flus, and the common cold, and all the other kinds of viral upper respiratory diseases. But facts get in the way again, you see. Facts are just a dire nuisance when you've got a very poor sci-fi to produce and display to the public, to put on display, and convince the public to give up all the rights and freedoms and put your whole faith, your whole future, or non-future, because you might die of the vaccination, some of what they said might die. And you can't sue anybody if you get sick because of it, because they've passed a law that they get immunity for giving the vaccine companies, that is, and also the folk who are going to stick it in you as a pincushion and get paid for it. They're not doing it for free. So, yeah, you understand, you can't, that's, you're supposed to just accept on faith and accept, well, I might die of this. How do you feel at the moment? I feel fine. Do you feel sick? No, I'm not sick at all. Well, I'll take this shot anyway, and if you die, then at least you made your own decision to take it. And that's it. That's a contract right there, actually. Yeah. That's what they're putting across to you. If they even give you, they're supposed to give you informed consent before they do any medical procedure on you. That's a medical procedure, actually. It's still invasive, sticking something in you. And they want you to forget all that and just give all your rights up, to even your own life, to the system and science and corporations that are behind it all. And they want to terrify you so much that you'll just throw your hands in the air and say, oh, for goodness sake, get ahead, go on with it then. And then they'll tell you, well, this is only the first one of a series of them. Oh, now last week it was a week before, I read the articles, again, in the mainstream newspapers, right? That were the people who were getting tested with it, getting you ready for the getting sick, by the way. Because they said, well, the first one said so-and-so, a test subject, it wasn't so bad, with a sore arm, you know, and stiff and sore. It's the second one that this woman said that it might floor you for a day or two. You say, you might have to go off work. Well, you want to borrow work, you won't have any work anyway, you're all going bankrupt. But yeah, you might have to take days. Well, something that's going to put you on your back for a couple of days is doing you harm. You have to do no harm is the first rule. Yeah? And the old Hippocratic oath that they used to take, do no harm. And someone who's going to get floored in their back, who was healthy before, by the way, and is going to put on their back for at least a couple of days, I'd say that's doing them harm. Never mind the fact you don't have the long-term studies. There's even articles I'll touch on today where they want the right to put through the vaccinations that they say might have been rushed through initial testing, but they want to put them through out there without even getting licensed by the government. See, no one wants to touch this and get in case somehow, by some miracle, there could be lawsuits down the road, regardless of what they've signed on to. So what's the game here? Huh? Well, the game is something I did talks on years ago, that they're now calling the immunity passport. They wanted they wanted everyone electronically to have electronic surveillance from the United Nations, WHO and so on, and some way of registering vaccinations, not just the occasional thing that you would volunteer for or say, okay, you know, but all vaccinations that they that were on the books already, and boosters, annual boosters for everything, and so on and so on. You see, again, we are the business. I don't care what excuse we are a business. When folk are becoming multi-billionaires off of you, that's called a business, you see. And when you exploit the public to get the business, then you're exploitative, and you're also rather evil. And when your governments are in the bed with them, that's called fascism, folks, where you must take this company's product, even if it's going to harm you. Simple as that. We've only been through the whole, the admissions, which I'll touch on again, from the health authorities in the summer, where they had to backtrack on all the COVID deaths, as they called them, that were to terrify you, and reduce them by 96%. They were padding everything for deaths. No matter what you died of, it was COVID. And COVID, this wishy-washy particle test, little bits and pieces of a possible virus, it doesn't mean you've got it. It doesn't even mean you've had it. If you had that in your nostrils, that regardless of what killed you, even accidents on the road, they'd put you down as COVID death. So they did, a lot of them did retract that officially. And by a massive sum. Now, when they go to such lengths to lie to you, why would you go right back to square one with the boogeyman's out again, eh? Is this because it's Halloween? Oh, be very, very afraid, children. I want to drink your blood. And right back to square one again with the same stuff, waving their hands, terrifying you. Same stuff. When do you want to start trusting the same liars who were shown to be liars come the summer with admissions? But they're right back at it again. And they'll keep at it, they won't give up. And don't forget with their tiered lockdown system from Event 201 and also the Lockstep 2010. And all the other admissions have come out since from different organizations working towards this agenda. Do you really think these folk are going to give up? They're not going to give up. It's a world agenda to bring the whole world under a new form of rulership. Rulership, it's not government, it's rulership. They might use governance as rulership. Rulership by themselves and corporations. That was what Quigley said. He was all for the agenda. The man who taught the State Department employees in the US, he taught them, generations of them. They ran everything. That's the most important part in the US government, State Department. And they dish out the billions across the planet and decide it's all private business and corporations and so on. And who gets what taxpayer money thrown out to what nation or whatever, and all that stuff, you know. Who's going to get rich, and all these new characters that are brought into it suddenly are billionaires, a lot of them, or their friends are, or their families become. It's so incredibly corrupt. But really, it's not corrupt, because corruption would infer that it's illegal. But it's not illegal. That's just it. We live in an incredible fiction of reality, the one that they've drafted up for us, you see. indoctrinated into us. People have forgotten the joking, and I call them jokes for inquiries that they had after 2007 and 8, supposed, that was a little reset then to a little collapse, planned collapse. And the heads of the Federal Reserve there and so on, and was it Bernanke? There was different ones there. An inquiry, and they made it quite plain that they couldn't be prosecuted for what they did. And that their system, the Federal Reserve system, was a separate body from the U.S. government that could not have any penalties levied against it. It's astonishing. But folk think it's federal, that it's part of... No. All government sections that used to run the countries privatized whole areas long, long ago and farmed it out to private agencies. And again, parts of the fascistic system, you see. That way you can't challenge it. That used to be what government did. We used to deal with that part of society, but it's nothing to do with us now, so you can't sue us. It's owned by a private company. They do it all for us. You know. That's how every public-private partnerships. Well, if you're a member of the public, you get to say that you're signed on, or can even complain that you're signed on to these partnerships. Have you ever seen anything, any questionnaire asking you for your permission on anything? No. Terminology is so important because that's how they get everything that they want done. By use of words. Very important words, aren't they? And George Orwell had it in 1984. Well, very important, the use of words, and these things called words, when he's sitting in the cafeteria. And someone who worked on the dictionary next to him came in, and they had a little conversation. Oh, you're working on the latest version so-and-so of the dictionary. Yeah, yes. He said, did you know that the dictionary used to be, and he put his hands out, and he showed me something about this thick, 3 inches or 4 inches. He says, last year it was down to, and he showed you about something down to about an inch, and he says, but this year it's down to about a quarter inch. I said, really, brother, wow. Because once again, Orwell shows you that this surrealistic system that you're then into, where you have to literally warp your own brain and go through an act of madness to accept it all, or be discovered that you're still sane. So they say at the table, oh, I see, brother. So the words are becoming minimalistic, fewer and fewer words. So when eventually you get to a stage where if you were subversive, a terrorist, you like wrong thinker or own thinker, and so on, all these different terms, which they're coming out with now, they're using them quite openly now, aren't they? And you've got vaccine hesitancy now. And they've got agencies employed to overcome your vaccine hesitancy. It's because your choice. No, you're hesitant. Mm. So at the table, he says, I see, brother, he says. And so when there's no more words to express your discontent or even organize to fight and become terrorist, then the terrorism will be obsolete. It couldn't happen because you can't convey the thoughts. Precisely, brother. And that's where you're going, folks. Linguistic minimalism. And they then implant all these new words. Have you noticed how there's just a whole barrage of new terms come out recently? I don't even bother trying to find out what they are anymore. I don't care. I don't need to lose my sanity. War, complete war on everything, including vocabulary. It's really interesting. And before I go for this part, let's mention they should go into cuttingthroughthematrix.com. I always say the same talk. Don't just dismiss it or turn off your ears, because it's all coming down very quickly. If you can't find my talks, if they suddenly get cut off or whatever, go into cuttingthroughthematrix.com. look at all my official sites which are listed there. Copy that, take a note of it, so that if one goes down, hopefully you can still get me on another one of them. These are all my official sites. Other sites I'll use my talks out there, and as long as they don't change anything, you know, they can use them. And but my official ones are on my com site and my other official. Everyone's an official site on the .com site that's listed there. Make a note of it. It's awfully important because they're going to, under the different stage, 2, 3, 4, and 5 tier lockdowns and so on, they also up the ante against going after folk who won't agree with it. They call them social influencers. A social influencer is someone that collects facts and has got the ability to put them across to people. That's a dangerous thing in this day and age. They're at war with you. And they are at war with you. But make no mistake, this is war, total war, on the whole population, even the ones who don't know what's going on. They've got a war against them to bring in a new system which they must give obedience to. A system that they talked about for years, trying to get you to deindustrialize totally, going back to a pre-industrial age where folk died of all kinds of pneumonias because they couldn't even eat themselves and might have decent nourishment and so on. And it's all to come back, you see, under necessity. There's too many of you. Too many of you. Even though all the European countries were diminishing in populations, they weren't never that high, to be honest with you, compared to other nations. But they were good. People were good. They listened to their betters and said, yeah, it's okay, 2 to a family and no more. And that'll be just replacement rate, no more. And then you start getting 1 to a family and then you're below replacement. But even so, it's not overpopulation. In fact, if you were to meet the targets they wanted to you to meet in the 1930s, 40s, 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, you'd done awfully well. You were good citizens, you see. But then they flood your countries with mass migration from countries that I've never heard of, minimalistic families. Yeah? That no one had told them to cut back in public. And so they'll still breed and so on. And then it turned out, oh, there's too many of you now. Well, what is it supposed to be? You're being good and you're not having as many children. Well, that's bad now. It's bad for you because you'll die off. But there you go. You can't. You see, it's not meant that you satisfy your owners. It's what's been planned for the world. And certain groups especially have to be completely eradicated. I was thinking of that today. I was looking at the articles in Ireland and Scotland, and I thought, well, how come countries that literally had genocides carried out on them, and they were planned genocides, let's make no bones about that, yeah? That you'd think, and again, it shows you how the great work that was done on them to make them all forget and by, again, fate, history and all the rest of it, and it was potatoes that killed you off, bad potatoes, bad spuds, and stuff like that, you know. But that was planned genocide. And, people used to say to me, oh, the Highlands are so beautiful in Scotland, you know, so beautiful. And I said, yeah, because you can go there and you see these wild mountains and valleys and beautiful, and at good days when it's not pouring rain. It's beautiful, empty places. But there's a tremendous feeling of sadness there, if you're a Scot, at least for me anyway. And I used to tell the tourists, yeah, it's hard to imagine that millions of people used to live out all in those places. What happened to them? Well, they were slaughtered. Slaughtered and starved. And deported across the world to other nations to build it up for Britain, for the UK, the British Empire. So bad too that when you read the historian and author John Preble wrote some good books on the Highland Clearances. I think one of them was called the Highland Clearances, and the line in the north was another one, and Culloden, I think perhaps too. But he was a historian also for the British War. Association, basically, in the military association, Department of Defense, basically. So he knew his stuff, and he went into the histories of what happened and had access to it too, because there's so much they don't tell the public when it comes to planned slaughter. And so he put some good information out there, enough that he was allowed to put it that way. But he talks about the rebellion in 1745, the uprising, as they call it.